deported, but are defying those judges' orders and remain here in the United States. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi reacts to the news.
It's about values that the president does not seem to share, and we saw this morning when he announced his heartless raids on families this coming Sunday.
With President Trump speaking at the White House regarding a citizenship question on the 2020 census, House Republican leader Kevin McCarthy from California does believe that there should be a citizenship question on the census.
The census only comes around once every 10 years. We ask numerous amount of questions. I think this is data that we have a right to know and should know.
A Democratic-led House panel is authorizing a dozen subpoenas to people with close ties to President Trump. This all stems back to the Mueller report. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
At Walgreens, we know that your day doesn't stop for diabetes. So when you've got places to go and people to see, count on Walgreens every day to get expert diabetes advice 24/7. Find all major brands of testing supplies like Walgreens True Metrics in-store and online. And download tools to help you stay on track, like our 5-star mobile app with Pill Reminder. At Walgreens, we are your diabetes go-to. Stop by and talk to your pharmacist today. Walgreens, trusted since 1901.
With a recession ending, if you've been putting off building your business, now is the time to act. General Steel will meet or beat any price on a pre-engineered steel building of the same size and specifications. Act now before steel prices go up. So call us today for free information.
Call 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290.
Don't fear technology. Use it, understand it, and embrace it. The mission of Tech Today is to demystify technology. I'm your host, Chris Bianco, principal of Blue Panther Business Partners. Every Tuesday morning from 10 to 11, we will cover new apps, buying advice, technology news, and answer your questions. Good day, and join me on Tech Today on HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Good afternoon and welcome to Sharing the Hope, brought to you by Hunterdon Chamber Radio and sponsored by our agency, Prevention Resources. My name is Jennifer, and I'm joined by my colleague, Rocky. We are family support coordinators with the Family Support Center of Prevention Resources based here in Flemington, New Jersey, and our jobs support families in Hunterdon, Somerset, and Mercer counties. We broadcast live on Facebook every Thursday at 5, and the shows will be posted so you can listen at your convenience. Follow our Facebook page called Sharing the Hope. And we're excited today because instead of having a guest, we're going to interview each other.
Yes, we are.
Rocky Schwartz, let's start with you.
Jennifer.
Could you share with our listeners some of the details in your personal and professional journey that have uniquely prepared you for this role of family support coordinator?
I would be honored to. I don't usually do this, but I'm going to do it right now. I like to introduce myself in certain settings. As my name is Rocky, and I'm a woman in long-term recovery. And what that means is I have not used alcohol or any mind-altering substances since February 22nd, 1982, which is 37 years of continuous recovery.
Good for you, Rocky.
Thank you. The only reason why I'm saying this is because it's nothing to be ashamed of.
That's right.
It has actually been a great asset in my life to be in recovery, and ultimately it led me to this job and to work with you.
Which has been awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question for you.
Okay.
Could you tell us a bit about the Family Support Center and specifically who are its clientele and what are the goals?
So the Family Support Center is a fairly new opportunity in New Jersey. We just finished in April our first year of the grant. The state decided, and it was brilliant, that family members who have a loved one with substance use disorder need support, and there really is nothing out there for families. So our clients are family members, could be siblings, children, parents, a lot of grandparents we're seeing, who have a loved one with substance use disorder. The grant actually was originally for opioid use disorder, but we are seeing every substance imaginable. We're seeing a lot of marijuana and a lot of alcohol, actually. And when family members are struggling and they don't know where to turn to ask for help, we are there for them. So they can, all they have to do is give us a call, 908-788. I should have been prepared for this.
3909.
3909, thank you. Prevention Resources. I just have to say, Jenny and I were afraid that we were going to get a case of the giggles today, and I think it might be happening.
It might be happening.
But anyway, 908-788-3909. You can reach out to us at Prevention Resources. And we're there for family members, shoulder to cry on, someone to listen to, someone to guide them through the very complicated system on how you get someone help. Guide them through challenges with getting insurance coverage. Many times their loved one doesn't want help, so help them to find a way to live their lives regardless, and to live their lives not just in survival mode, but ultimately to try to be thriving.
And sometimes helping them learn new ways to communicate with their loved ones, mm-hmm. rather than the high decibel method or repeatedly lecturing or, you know, the things that haven't worked in the past, maybe reaching their loved ones halfway in a calm manner.
Yeah.
So we do a little coaching on that.
Which reminds me that we have been trained in the CRAFT approach.
Yeah, which Rocky, let's talk about CRAFT.
Yes, which is Community Reinforcement Approach and Family Training. And it's part of it is exactly what you just talked about, coming up with new communication strategies, nagging, pleading, putting holes in walls, screaming, crying, are natural human responses, but they're not always effective.
Right.
And so that's one of the things that we talk with people about is, like you said, changing their communication styles and their strategies.
Right. And it is interesting that as that is related to self-care. And if you're feeling better about yourself, more rested, you can stay calmer when there's a crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we all know about that oxygen mask on the plane. If we can take care of ourselves first, then we can take care of our other responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, those are all things we talk about with our clients.
Yeah, and, you know, most of the families that come to us are in crisis. And when you're living with, especially a child, whether they're 30 years old or 13, who is in the midst of addiction and the insanity of it and the fear, especially today when fentanyl is mixed in so many mm-hmm. things and we are losing so many people. It's a real honor to be there for people and to just be with them and to help coach them for how can they kind of fill up their cup a little bit because they're so exhausted. And
typically very isolated. Mm-hmm. But they haven't had anybody to talk to in a while, and they're afraid of being judged or their loved ones being judged.
Mm-hmm.
So to find a safe space that's confidential and accepting, non-judgmental, and, of course, we're not trying to fix anything, but maybe look at situations in a little bit different way than they have before.
Mm-hmm.
So all of those things are important and come together.
And we do know the CRAFT approach has been used, I think, for over 30 years, much more in Europe and Canada than here in the United States. But a lot of people in New Jersey are now being trained for it. And we know that families can make some changes, positive changes, to help get their loved one into treatment. It's not always a guarantee, but there are certainly things that we can do to help support the loved one.
So, Rocky, that makes me think of two things. One, I would ask you, what are those things that we can do to support people? And, of course, that's some of what we've already been talking about. But the other thing is, treatment isn't the only path to sobriety.
That's correct. So we honor all paths to recovery. Mm-hmm. It's not really our place to dictate how someone gets into recovery.
Right.
But we definitely try to send the message to family members that we don't want to judge someone whatever path they choose. And when I say paths, I mean someone could find help through a faith-based community. Someone could be on medication-assisted treatment. Some people can just stop, not very many.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's helpful for the family member to understand it really isn't a choice. Once the drugs have hijacked the brain, it's not a choice anymore. And the
brain has actually reformed.
Exactly.
In such a way that the person is being told,
yes,
I need this substance.
And so when we say to our loved one, what's wrong with you? Why don't you understand what you're doing? Why don't you see the consequences? It's not helpful. And it's sometimes very helpful, I think, for a family member to understand that not only does the family member feel shame, but the person who's using is full of shame and doesn't want to continue this behavior. Mm-hmm. But becoming abstinent, getting sober, and putting down drugs or drinking, which, you know, I'll speak for myself, I couldn't imagine my life without it. I thought that, in my case, alcohol was helping me to cope with my life. So it didn't make any sense to me. I could not make the connection that much of my life was out of control because of my drinking.
Did you feel, you were a young person, did
yeah.
you feel empowered by your drinking?
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt very grown up and sophisticated.
Right.
Even though it was, the way I presented myself was certainly not very sophisticated. But that was, yeah, it was very empowering, mm-hmm. and it was soothing. I mean, I saw it was soothing in many ways. When I first started drinking, which was at the age of 12, and using other drugs, it was like a social lubricant for me. I was very shy, which many kids are at the mm-hmm. age of 12, but I didn't have the coping skills or the ability to cope with those kinds of feelings. I also grew up in an alcoholic home, and I think that kind of chaos that I grew up in, I never felt like I had a safe place to go to talk about these things, not blaming my parents at all.
No, but you're sharing something very tender. 12 years old is very young. You're looking for...
just to fit in.
A way to fit in.
Yeah.
Right. And if you had a lot of chaos around you and you didn't have anybody reaching out a hand to show you other ways to cope, and this is what you knew.
It's what I knew. Yeah. And it worked. I mean, mm-hmm. that's why people don't want to give up for a while.
Mm-hmm.
It works for a while. Otherwise, no one would... I'm always just amazed when I hear these stories of, I got drunk, I threw up, and it was the last thing I ever wanted to do. Oh, no, 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 no. And I think that's the difference between someone who is an alcoholic and someone who isn't.
It's really true.
Yeah.
The brains are just different.
Yeah.
You and I are just different.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But for me, it did work. It was mm-hmm. empowering. Mm-hmm. It helped me to feel like I fit in. Mm-hmm. I felt comfortable in my own skin. It was like magic. And so why would I give that up?
So, Rocky, mm-hmm. right there, right there is a piece of understanding that we can offer our family members. Because we ask our clients, do you know why? Has your loved one offered why they're using? Mm-hmm. And as you said, they don't want to be irresponsible and making bad choices. On the other hand, there's something they're getting out of it, at least at first.
Mm-hmm.
And that ambivalence is something we all experience in different aspects of our lives. So just to have empathy for that ambivalence is sometimes a starting point for a conversation.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's an excellent tool to give to a family member. Hard to wrap your head around, though.
Right.
Very hard when...
Well, when you're feeling desperate.
Mm-hmm. You're terrified.
You're terrified, and you are exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
And again, isolated, generally. Yep. So, and based in fear. Our reactions are based in fear.
And I'll say for myself, I was 12 when I started drinking, and I was 21 when I got sober. I literally did not think that I had a problem. And so that is a really hard thing for family members to understand.
Well, how would a teenager think she had a problem? I mean, that makes sense to me that you didn't think you had a problem. You were feeling more at ease socially. You were feeling that you could fit in. It was what you knew. So it was counterintuitive to hear perhaps you had a problem. I wonder if you could share a little bit about how you made that decision then at 21, or how did you receive the help to make a change in your life?
Well, the decision was made for me, thanks inadvertently to my family. But the one thing I just want to go back a moment is what alcohol and drugs did for me in the beginning didn't work for me anymore. That's the thing that's confusing about addiction. I reached a point where it wasn't making me feel comfortable. There was not enough. Once I started drinking, my choices and everything about my life was out of my control. And I ended up in places with people that I would never normally be with when I was sober. And so I began to wake up filled with shame, blacking out all the time, not understanding how I got there.
How scary.
Terrifying. Yeah. Terrifying. And full of shame. But I still didn't think it was the alcohol. That's the confusing thing for a family member to understand, that I still thought that if I could just find the right amount or the right mix of different drinks or the mix of different pills with drinks, that maybe I would get that first feeling back. Does that make sense?
It makes sense, and I've heard that so many times.
Yeah. So that's why it's... So I did not wake up one day and decide that I have an alcohol problem and I need to quit. I went to pick up my father in rehab the day he was discharged because no one else in my family would get him. Mm-hmm. And I showed up after drinking all the booze in the house the day before because they told us to get rid of it. And
that's one way.
Why throw it out? And I showed up probably not in very good state. He clearly had talked with them about my behavior. Mm-hmm. And they asked me to stay. I literally didn't even get to go home and change my bags.
Wow.
Pack my bags, not change my bags.
They asked you to stay,
and
you agreed.
They asked me to stay, and I agreed. I don't know why. I like to believe it's the grace of God.
Right. It seems that there often is a window of opportunity,
mm-hmm.
and everything came together for you in that moment,
mm-hmm.
and you stayed.
And that's why I never give up hope for people. Because all it takes is that small window of opportunity where mm-hmm. a person is finally able to look at themselves. I can count one finger where that feeling that someone connected with me, with my heart, and it was my mother said to me one day, "You drink just like your father."
Oh, wow.
And it felt like someone stuck a serrated knife in me and twisted it, because at that moment I was vulnerable and I knew she was right. And it was the last person I ever wanted to be like. Mm-hmm. I loved my dad. My dad was a wonderful man, but he was also an alcoholic.
Right.
And so, you know, the other thing that we talk with families about is there are opportunities when a person may be in a very vulnerable state. And if you can communicate with them, like we talked about earlier, mm-hmm. in a way that doesn't force them to get defensive, and you've already kind of done the work to see what kind of help is available, mm-hmm. if you have insurance, already checked to see what's covered, already know where to call when the person is ready to get help, there's that magical moment.
It is a magical moment. And when you say, if we have everything ready, we've done our research, or we're ready with perhaps treatment providers who are within our insurance, but often I suspect people are so caught up in the activity of, or, you know, living with somebody who's drinking, exhausted perhaps, worried, staying up night, driving the streets of Newark looking for their child, looking for them in the cities, not really taking the time to get prepared for that moment. Mm-hmm. There's also this false notion that somehow we can, as parents, keep our children safe mm-hmm. if we know where they are. And because we have protected our children their entire lives.
Of course.
So it's counterintuitive to think that somebody else can do this better and to do the research and be prepared for that. So you're right. There's a lot of educating that we do, sharing information, and even helping people navigate their insurance websites, any help that they can use or we can offer.
And when we talk about meeting with families, we can do it in person. We can meet someone for a cup of coffee mm-hmm. someplace else. We do have an office, but we can. Some families just want to text with us. Mm-hmm. Some want to email. Whatever the family member needs, that's what we provide for them. And then we also have groups, which we'll probably right. talk about
we'll
after.
We'll talk about in a little while.
Yeah. I think we need to take a break soon.
Yes, I think we do too. I just want to underscore that all of our services are free of charge.
Absolutely.
As well, which
Good
is pretty
point.
Amazing. So, yeah, let's take a break. We'll be back with Rocky.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Oh, folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for modern design.
This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, well, I'd like her room to be gray. And the little girl said, Mom, gray is the color of depression.
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provide sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
Welcome back to Sharing the Hope. We're so glad you're here with us today, talking about how we came into the role of family support coordinators at the Family Support Center of Prevention Resources based here in Hunterdon County, New Jersey. My name is Jennifer Denlinger, and I'm here with Rocky Schwartz. And we're just going to keep talking a little bit with Rocky about her own experiences and the goals of the Family Support Center and what we do. So, Rocky, how about talking a little bit about the family group meetings?
So we have family group meetings, and I want to make sure I have the correct information in front of me. The Hunterdon County group meets in Flemington. Do you have the information in front of you?
First and third Wednesdays. 6:30 at our office for Walter Foran Boulevard.
Perfect. And then we have a group in Somerset County that meets the second and fourth Wednesdays of every month from 6 to 7 o'clock at the Pioneer Family Success Center in Somerville, which, by the way, they have free parking.
I apologize. I had the wrong mic on for Rocky. So now she's back. So let's go back to the family group meeting. Sorry.
So we have family groups in Somerset and Hunterdon counties. Jennifer runs the one in Flemington. I should say you run it. You facilitate it.
Yes, right. It's a conversation amongst the attendees. And often we have a topic. Often it's based in craft, but actually, there's a lot of sharing of the stories. There's a lot of what I call the sacred stories, people's narratives of what's going on in their lives. So, yes, our group meets the first and third Wednesdays at our office, Walter Foran Boulevard, and at 6:30 to 7:30 at night.
And Christine, who is not with us tonight, facilitates the group that meets in Somerset County. It meets at the Pioneer Family Success Center in Somerville. It's in downtown Somerville. There's a beautiful parking garage, free parking, and it's the second and fourth Wednesday of every month from 6 to 7 o'clock. And those groups are free, just like our one-on-one work that we do.
I suggest people come to the groups and give them a try, and if it doesn't feel quite right, remember that we do the one-on-one visits. We do the other means of communications, and the meetings aren't for everybody, but what is really special about the meetings is making the connections, and sometimes people form relationships beyond the meeting, and that's what I love, to hear that maybe someone's going to dinner before the meeting or checking on each other, because, again, we get so isolated and wrapped up in our loved one's addiction that we lose relationships in our lives. So that's really important.
Yeah, I think there's nothing more beautiful than trying for months to convince someone to come to a group. And then, because they're so isolated, I mean, we have families that don't tell their own siblings or don't talk with their parent about it. And then to see them come to the group and a couple weeks later go out to dinner beforehand. Or to see them, because you can barely get them out the door sometimes because they're chit-chatting so much, and it's beautiful.
And we've worked so hard on self-care, right? So seeing people start to feel better about themselves, that they can do things and not be obsessing quite so much.
Share one more thing? Mm-hmm. I think when a parent looks across the room and sees another parent and hears them talk about, I went on a vacation, or I haven't called in sick in 3 weeks, I think they get permission from the other parent that it's okay to take care of myself.
Right. And, you know, also, I think it'd be really important to point out, we're not in competition with any other support groups.
No, we encourage other
support groups. We encourage all kinds of participation in support groups. So this is just one other kind of support group where people can come, share the stories. It resonates within each of us. The journeys are the same. The details are different. And it's actually a pretty special place to be.
And we share that information about support groups in our communities with the family members. So absolutely we do share that.
Yeah. So, Rocky, let's talk about the wellness plans. We have individual wellness plans that we work on.
So each family member, we try to put together a wellness plan. Essentially, it's to help, not to help their loved one. This is about the family member. And the wellness plan can be as simple or as complicated as they want it to be. So, for example, this may sound silly, but a wellness plan for someone short term could be trying to get that person to sit down once a week, have a cup of tea, light a candle, and then take a nice hot bath.
Yeah. And it's not even trying to get them to do that. It's actually, if I can back up a little bit, finding out a little bit about what they would like to do. What does wellness look like to them? What are they missing in their lives? What, and as we speak with them, we generally can identify goals that they may have for themselves and in relationship with their loved ones. And so how we can take steps to do that and protect ourselves a little bit more. So yeah, it can be as simple as that cup of tea or a bath, or it could be walking away from our phones for an hour.
Yes.
Right? Or
not responding to every single text.
Right. And of course, the things we usually think about with self-care that are hard for all of us anyway, but fitting in exercise, eating right, getting rest, going to bed early enough to get, you know, sufficient sleep. But the wellness plan also, the way I look at it, Rocky, is a series of goals. And they can start out, as you say, just very small goals. And to try to keep, it's not a formal process where we're checking off boxes.
Correct.
For a wellness plan. We're just talking about, what does wellness look like to you? What are you missing in your life?
You know what this reminds me of is that the symptoms, for lack of a better term right now, the symptoms of the substance abuser and the symptoms of the family member are almost identical. So I was thinking about when we ask a family member, what do you like to do for fun? What do you find enjoyable? They are stumped. And it's the same. It's the
right.
They have the same shame, the same isolation, the same lack of, I haven't had fun in so long.
Loss of self.
Loss of self, yes, everything.
Obsessing.
It's the same symptoms.
Well, and that's why I like to talk about being in our own recovery as family members. Mm-hmm. We're all in recovery. This disease is a family disease.
Absolutely
is. The disease of substance use disorder, it affects the patient, which is the whole family. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, what you say is absolutely true.
We're very blessed to be able to have this job.
I love my job.
Me too. Not many people can say that.
No. So, let me just check the time here. We're going to take another break in a few minutes, but I know that you are passionate about mental health, and you particularly have worked on the insurance parity issue, parity or insurance denial. You've been honored by several organizations for your advocacy work. A lot of people know you for that, including NAMI New Jersey. NAMI is?
National Alliance on Mental Illness.
And the Mental Health Association of New Jersey. And in addition, you've even testified 3 times before the New Jersey Assembly, once on Capitol Hill. You met with New Jersey Attorney General staff and testified to the President's Commission on Combating Drug Addiction and the Opioid Crisis in 2017. Very impressive. So tell me, Rocky, and for our listeners, what does mental health parity actually mean?
So mental health parity just means, very simply, that behavioral health care should be treated exactly the same as medical surgical care. They should be on par or equal. And there was a bill passed by President Bush in 2001 at the federal level that said behavioral health services, which includes mental health and substance use disorders, should be treated exactly the same as medical surgical, that there should be no discrimination between the two.
18 years ago.
Correct. The reason why I got involved in this was why I'm so passionate about it, is when I needed help 37 years ago, my parents didn't have to take out a home equity loan to pay for my treatment. And I actually had two hospitalizations. Mm. I had a suicide attempt a year prior and spent 3 months in a hospital. And my parents did not have to fight to get me the care that I needed. When people that I love in my life, and it makes me want to tear up, but including I lost my sister 15 years ago to an accidental overdose. When people that I love needed help, I just assumed, because I knew about this parity law, I just assumed that they would get the help that the doctor recommended.
And you had insurance.
And I had great insurance.
As many of us
great do. Private insurance with a large employer. And I was stunned that they were denied the care that the professionals were recommending. I was stunned. I could not believe it.
It doesn't make sense.
No. So that's how I got involved in this. There have been a lot of improvements over the years. It used to be there were even separate co-pays for behavioral health. There were separate deductibles. And that is all against the parity law. And that has changed.
In other words, with the same insurance plan, you would
have
a deductible for your physical health as well as a deductible for your mental health.
Correct. But that was against the law.
Wow.
No one was enforcing it. So a lot of advocates, I have to put a shout out to former Congressman Patrick Kennedy, who was the co-sponsor of that bill 18 years ago. And is also a person in long-term recovery and is open about it. That's why I'm sharing it, and also struggles with mental health issues. And he has been taking this cause on, and because of his influence has been able to help get a lot of different organizations involved to fight for this. I was honored that he invited me twice to go to Washington. I'm very, very grateful for the opportunities that he's given me, but he fights for people to have the care that they deserve. I could talk a little bit more about what we're doing at a local level in New Jersey after the break, perhaps.
Yeah, before we do that, just can you tell me, is it common for a family to be denied insurance care for a mental health issue?
Very common, and I think we see that with the families that we help.
Mm-hmm.
We have families that, they have to ask for loans from other family members, and they have to borrow from their retirement plans, and they have to sell stock.
Or insurance is very limited to a short number of days, and their loved ones come home before they've really received the treatment they need.
Right, and that is where we come in.
Okay, so we are going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to share the hope regarding the parity law.
Yay.
That you've been working so hard for. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunter Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
¿Sabía que de cada 5 personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental? NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody right there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Okay. We're back.
We are back.
And we're going to just remind everybody about our services. We have our family support groups twice a month in Flemington, twice a month in Somerville on Wednesday evenings. And we're going to be back next week at 5 o'clock on Thursday with Lori Water, who's going to be talking to us about healing from within. So that will be a wonderful topic to explore. Rocky, your story is so powerful. Thank you for sharing that with us today. And I'm learning a lot about the parity loss. So maybe, yes, you could tell us a little bit about what's happening on the local level to help families.
So a coalition was started called the New Jersey Parity Coalition. Don't get the giggles on me.
So sorry.
The New Jersey Parity Coalition was started, and I, at the time, I'm trying to remember how I found out about it. I was the co-chair of the New Jersey Behavioral Health Planning Council. On the council, not as a professional, but as a family member. And I believe it was someone in NAMI told me, probably Phil Lubitz.
Hey, Phil.
Hey, Phil. Told me about this coalition. So I went to the coalition meeting, said, this is exactly where I belong. We meet once a month. We are still meeting once a month, but this was about 4 years ago. The coalition is made up of many different members of the community. It is made up of professionals in the community, people with no one from insurance companies, by the way.
Have they been invited?
I believe so, yes. We have providers, meaning rehab facilities that are there because they have to fight a lot to keep people in treatment. We have representatives from the Mental Health Association in New Jersey, from the different professional organizations of psychologists and social workers. And then we also, from NCAD, which is the National Council on Alcohol and Drug Dependence, and that is actually where our meetings are held at the NCAD offices in Robbinsville. And then we have family members who have been denied treatment for their loved ones. And they are the ones that, you know, most cases it's the mama bear.
Right.
We are tired of fighting and want to make a change so other people don't have to struggle.
Can I go back to one of these groups you mentioned? You said the treatment providers who have to fight to keep their patients. And by that, you mean they have to advocate for their patients with the insurance companies.
Correct.
To get payment in order to keep these patients in treatment that is needed, so desperately needed.
Yes. So typically, an insurance company, someone, if they're admitted to an inpatient program, someone from the treatment facility is on the phone almost every single day with the insurance company fighting to get one more day of care. And by the end of 5 to 7 days, they're already starting to talk about dropping them down to a lower level of care. Some people get 28 days of treatment. That is still unusual for many people. I would say 5 to 10 days is probably the norm. Mm-hmm. A lot of healing cannot be done in that period of time. As a matter of fact, a lot of the detox can't even be done, a lot of medication management. But yes, it's the rehabs and the different providers that are fighting to keep patients in treatment.
And that, I can say from personal experience, also happens with the physical care, with the medical care, trying to get treatment for something that has been recommended for your loved one, and you still, these days, it seems, have to fight with your insurance company to make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
And imagine when you have, again, that window we were talking about for somebody who's open to receiving care and treatment.
Yep.
And if you're fighting the insurance company and you're not getting the treatment that apparently legally we deserve and are owed, our loved one may decide that they don't want to be there anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's criminal. It's discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
And it is against the law. The problem is the law wasn't being enforced.
Right. So what's happening now?
So the Parity Coalition has a couple of different working groups, we call ourselves. And one of the working groups is a legislative working group. And we have been trying, this was before I got involved, so this has been about 10 years of trying to get a law passed in New Jersey to enforce the federal law. The New Jersey Department of Banking and Insurance is supposed to help consumers, residents in New Jersey, help them with these kinds of issues. But
and how would somebody know that?
Well, they would know it because on the explanation of benefit that you get from the insurance company, mm-hmm. we'll have their information.
Okay.
Yes. Couple of problems. Number one, a lot of people are so exhausted and burnt out and stressed out, and already their loved one's probably home from treatment, that they don't want to have to fight this.
And imagine if you are working full-time
as
a parent, you have other children.
Yep.
Who knows what your own health situation is and what other health situations may be going on in the family. To take on that battle against this big entity.
Correct.
That seems very well equipped in stonewalling us.
Yep. And so the Department of Banking and Insurance is supposed to be enforcing these laws. There are carriers that, carriers meaning insurance companies, Cigna, United Healthcare, Blue Cross Blue Shield, that provide state plans. And so no one was looking and auditing them and saying, you are not providing the same level of care for behavioral health care as you are for medical surgical. So after many years, the reason why it said I've testified three times in New Jersey is because it has been three or four legislative cycles that we've been in. We finally got a law passed.
So much hard work went into that.
A lot of hard work.
Our listeners can't see Rocky's smile, maybe, but...
A lot of hard work, a lot of pain, and a lot of frustration.
Mm-hmm.
And the Senate, we've never even made it to the Senate side. Mm-hmm. We've always testified in the Assembly side. And the Senate voted 100% yes.
Wow.
Yeah. So,
which meant you did your groundwork.
Governor Murphy signed it into law in April. And he did something wonderful. He didn't just sign it at his desk. He had a big media event at a hospital in Trenton
Wow.
with the EMTs and the doctors and people in their uniforms surrounding the room to send the message that this is truly a medical issue and should be treated as such. Mm-hmm. Now, the reason why the Parity Coalition is continuing to meet is because we have a law on the books. We're not there yet with enforcement. They had 60 days, Department of Banking and Insurance had 60 days to start to enforce this, and we're still not even close. So we are not going to back down, and we are going to ensure that this is enforced.
So I have a question, of mm-hmm. course, and that is, how can just regular people get involved with fighting for this issue?
So one of the things that would be very helpful to the coalition, the Department of Banking and Insurance says nobody complains. So the reason why they don't complain, stigma has a lot to do with it. Mm-hmm. So if it would be very helpful if someone could send a message, for example, through our Facebook page or call our office. If they have tried to reach out to the Department of Banking and Insurance in New Jersey for some help with an insurance denial or something not being paid and have not been assisted, that story would be helpful. The other story that would be helpful is, have you been denied care for your loved one? Have you had to pay out of pocket because it was denied? And if so, those stories are really important.
So, Rocky, we're talking about asking people to contact us. We're also talking about people being nervous about stigma.
Mm-hmm.
So we're suggesting that people private message on our Facebook
page. Correct, private message. Thank you for clarifying that. Mm-hmm. Don't need last names. Really just need, and I can discuss it with people privately. We also have, in our working groups, we have a working group called the Denied Treatment Families, and it's a group of 15 families that have met with the Attorney General in New Jersey. We have an attorney who's representing us pro bono. These are all families that have been denied treatment and paid out of pocket, and it's devastating because now 50% of our group have lost their children. But we are fighting to the Attorney General in New Jersey. This is more an enforcement piece. They are looking at this as a consumer fraud issue, that we buy insurance that states it will provide certain care, and then we're denied the care. And it's a consumer fraud issue. And if we are able to do this, New York State did this, and won a lot of money for families. And as a result of that, we're able to enforce the law, and their percentage of inpatient denials, and I know I'm sorry, I'm getting way too technical here.
Well, you're actually not.
Okay. But in New York State, their percentage of denials of care went from about 80% to 17%.
Wow.
Yeah. And they never even had to go to court. So our Attorney General in New Jersey is looking at our case and willing to try to fight for us.
And I understand receiving a letter from an insurance company in response for a request for treatment and being told that your child is not in danger mm-hmm. of losing his or her life.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question which you may or may not have the answer to, but if you have an insurance company that's based outside of New Jersey,
mm-hmm.
do they have to follow this as well? Or do they follow the legislation of their own state where it may not be enforced either? Sounds like it's not.
That's an excellent question. So the bill that was just passed in New Jersey only impacts people who have New Jersey-based plans. So those mm-hmm. are New Jersey employees, state employees, teachers, people who work for the state. If someone works for a large corporation that crosses state lines and has a self-funded plan,
mm-hmm.
they are under the jurisdiction of the United States Department of Labor.
I'm glad you bring that up. So how is the Department of Labor involved? We only have one or two more minutes.
Really?
Believe it or not.
So the if you are denied care, and there's a process that you need to go through for any of these things. If you're denied care, you file an appeal with your insurance company.
Mm-hmm.
You're denied, then you can file a second appeal. It goes to an independent organization, which we're finding out is many times part of the same insurance company. If you're denied a second time, then you can go through the United States Department of Labor. It is not an easy process.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of resources. The Kennedy Forum has resources online. There's something called the ParityRegistry.com that has a lot of resources and sample appeal letters. But that's also the kind of thing that we can help family members with, and also the Mental Health Association of New Jersey can help.
And I've seen literature for Don't Deny Me. Is this part
mm-hmm.
of...
Don't Deny Me is part of Patrick Kennedy's campaign, yes.
Okay.
And we're running out of time.
We are running out of time. So I think we're going to end with a reading, which is a little unusual for us.
Yes.
Would you like me to read it? Would you like to read it?
You read it. You have such a beautiful voice.
I'll try to get through it. So this is a little unusual for us, but before we sign off, we're going to read an adaptation from a poem by Alethea Mashar. And it's called I See You. I see you running your child to AA and NA meetings when your friends are running their kids to jobs or college placement testing. I see you slipping out of the conversation when your friends are all chiming in about milestones and college acceptance letters. I see you constantly juggling outpatient meetings and court dates. I see you sitting at your computer for hours, desperately researching addiction and treatment options or county jail rosters. I see you cringe when people whine about what feels like petty things. I see you debating whether you should pull out of your retirement again to pay for another round of treatment. I see you spread thin but still going the extra mile for your other family members because the guilt eats at you that they get so little of your attention. I see you yet again not taking a much-needed vacation for fear of what might happen while you're gone. On those days when you wonder if you can do it another minute, I want you to know I see you. I want you to know you're beautiful. I want you to know it's worth it. I want you to know you aren't alone. I want you to know love is what matters most, and you have that nailed. And on those days when you have breakthroughs, those times when the hard work pays off and success is yours to cherish, I see you then too, and I am proud of you.
Beautiful.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
While speaking at the White House, President Trump says he can't understand why asking a citizenship question on the 2020 census is such a big deal.
Are you a citizen? We spend, this is another thing that's so crazy.
Unbelievable.
Quite a growth plan.
So when did what was the first year that you started planting the garden?
2002.
Okay, so we've almost 10 years now, and you've, wow, that's a Wow, that's incredible. So you started out just doing gardening and running out, having this extra produce like most of us do.
Yeah.
And so now we got to go through you just started this particular thing on your personal level, but that doesn't really start an organization, right? When did the actual organization start?